Welcome to Brainstorm by Us Against Alzheimer's with our host, Merrill Comer. Merrill is a founding board member of Us Against Alzheimer's, a patient-centered nonprofit organization that has taken on the toughest problems in the fight against Alzheimer's disease. She is the author of the New York Times bestseller, Slow Dancing with a Stranger, which chronicles her journey as a caregiver for both her husband and her mother, who are living with Alzheimer's. Let's take a listen.
This is Brainstorm, and I'm Meryl Comer. Today's podcast is Public Health Leadership in Alzheimer's, Equity Matters. Our guests, three noted physicians, Dr. Richard Carmona, Dr. Jocelyn Elders, and Dr. David Satcher, all of whom served as U.S. Surgeon Generals, and all of whom, based on their personal life experiences, have been trailblazers in standing up against racism and unequal treatment throughout their entire careers. For two of them, their connection to Alzheimer's, as you'll soon learn, is also very personal. We hear first from Dr. Richard Carmona, nominated by President Bush in 2002 to become America's family doctor as the nation's 17th U.S. Surgeon General. Born in Puerto Rico, he grew up in New York, knew poverty and homelessness, and rose above it. He went on to live up to his reputation as an agent of change, willing to question the status quo. Hear how he framed the challenge of an aging society at the 2021 USA2's National Alzheimer's Summit.
As Surgeon General of the United States, I heard loud and clear the voices of senior Americans who feared losing their cognitive ability, as they may physically outlive their deteriorating brain function. What we do know is that cognitive decline is not inevitable. There is much we can do to prevent and or mitigate cognitive decline from Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. In addition, we also know that controlling lifestyle choices and health risk factors can prevent and or mitigate progression of dementias. Almost a half of dementias can possibly be prevented by eating healthy, staying physically active, socially connected, never smoking, getting good restful sleep, and aggressive prevention and or treatment of diseases like diabetes and hypertension and obesity. Unfortunately, as we know from the predictive value of the social determinants of health, chronic diseases, COVID, and now dementias as well, communities of color and females have a higher incidence of Alzheimer's. By 2030, over a third of Americans diagnosed with Alzheimer's will be Black or Latino. All of this is complicated by a rapidly aging population saddled with preventable chronic disease, cared for in a health system more aptly termed a sick care system that is inadequately structured and staffed to address the needs of the tsunami of Alzheimer's disease and other mental health and physical health challenges that are before us. We all want to live longer, younger, healthier, happier, and cheaper. Therefore, as a nation, we must prioritize healthy aging with a focus on prevention and treatment of dementias like Alzheimer's. We must understand that the public we have the privilege to serve is depending on us. For the challenges before us are not only of a health or economic imperative, but actually they're also national security issues. The window of prospective opportunity is closing. If we miss it, we are destined to be overwhelmed by preventable disease and economic burden while trying to survive what we could have prevented.
Also appearing, Dr. David Satcher, appointed by President Clinton, he had the distinction of having served as both the director of the CDC and as U.S. Surgeon General from 1998 to 2002. He has spent his 50-year career trying to move the needle toward health equity. Dr. Satcher's sense of purpose focused on correcting historical injustices that's rooted deep in his personal life experience. African-American, born in Alabama, he was inspired to become a doctor after hearing stories about how he had nearly died of whooping cough, but was treated by a Black doctor who came to his parents' farm in the deeply segregated South. While in college, Satcher was active in the civil rights movement. His Phi Beta Kappa and four-star admiral ranking in the Public Health Service put him on a public leadership track. Today, he serves as founding director and senior advisor of the Satcher Health Leadership Institute at the Morehouse School of Medicine. Dr. Satcher.
We define public health as the collective efforts of a society to create the conditions in which people can be healthy. I think that's a very important definition. In words like collective efforts, in other words, people working together, create the conditions. You know, you have to have certain conditions in order for people to be healthy. It relates to the air, the water, the safety, and all of those things are really critical. And certainly, we know that when it comes to Alzheimer's disease, we have to be concerned about the conditions to prevent the worst forms of Alzheimer's, but also the conditions necessary for people to be able to function with Alzheimer's. I said last night that I learned a lot about Alzheimer's, perhaps more than I wanted to know, because my wife, Nola, who was a poet, had Alzheimer's for the last 20 years of her life, and her mother before her had Alzheimer's. So I learned a lot about Alzheimer's in a way I would probably prefer not to have learned it, but my wife was a beautiful person and wrote beautiful poetry. I can only say that I think when it comes to public health, the question becomes, are we working together to prevent dementia? Are we working together collectively to make the best of people's lives if they have dementia, especially Alzheimer's? And that's very important in the definition of public health. Let me say that I think we don't have a cure for Alzheimer's, and it would be unfair for us even to say that we have an effective treatment, but we still have to find a way to make the best of the lives of people who have Alzheimer's. We're still learning a lot about Alzheimer's, but clearly tends to, quote, run in families. In other words, you're at greater risk for Alzheimer's if, like, you know, my wife was at greater risk because her mother had Alzheimer's. We can't say exactly what that risk is, you know, in genetics, which I studied for a few years. We like to be able to say what the risk is and how much greater it is than somebody who was born in this family or that family. It's not that kind of risk. But clearly, people who are born in families where there's Alzheimer's disease are at greater risk. And therefore, the more we learn about that risk, hopefully the better we are going to be prepared to deal with it. But I do want to say one thing that's, I think it's good news, and that is that clearly now we know that not everybody who gets the genes for Alzheimer's is going to be at equal risk for having the disease. And that's true of a lot of diseases. And of course, in the case of Alzheimer's, regular physical activity, good nutrition, early education, all of those things reduce the risk of having Alzheimer's disease. It doesn't reduce it to zero necessarily, but clearly we know that it reduces the risk.
Sharing the stage at the Us Against Alzheimer's Summit, Dr. Jocelyn Elders, the 15th Surgeon General of the United States, appointed by President Clinton in 1993. She is the first African American and only the second woman to lead the U.S. Public Health Service. Like our other profiles in Courage, Dr. Elders overcame racism and unequal treatment her entire life. When she attended medical school at the University of Arkansas in 1956, despite the Supreme Court ruling declaring separate but equal education unconstitutional 2 years earlier, she was required to eat in a separate dining room with the university cleaning staff. She has since gone on to become an esteemed professor of pediatrics at that same institution and is currently retired from medical practice and is professor emeritus at the University of Arkansas School of Medicine. Dr. Elders.
I think I came to the public health community in a roundabout way. I was kind of drafted. I was a pediatric endocrinologist on the university faculty, but I did lots of public health as a professor in rural Arkansas because it was absolutely essential. But Bill Clinton asked me to be the director of health. And I want you to know it was the most rewarding, wonderful job I ever had. I never enjoyed medicine so much. I went all over the country, all over Arkansas anyway, meeting people. I took care of an individual patient in my clinic or in my office. And it was getting out, meeting all of the people in public health, meeting the county judges, the public health nurses, the teachers, and the families, the churches, and the schools. It was just most rewarding. I think we can do a much better job for our seniors, for our patients that we're seeing with Alzheimer's. And I want you to know, my mother-in-law lived with us for 6 years with Alzheimer's. And I remember her daughter coming into our home. They was coming to visit their mother, but they said that they could not stand to feed her breakfast after I had gotten her all get up, get her bathed, fix her breakfast, and, you know, do the things I needed to do. So I'm just saying we can do much better now. And I think that the shame that I saw in my family was related to ignorance. They just didn't know better. They want to do better. And so I think we have a big teaching job ahead of us in educating all of our citizens about Alzheimer's disease and make it acceptable as a disease.
Dr. Elgers and Satcher have joined forces before, taking a stand in an op-ed in the Orlando Sentinel that, quote, brain health should be as much on people's minds as heart health, breast cancer, and the war on smoking. Let's hear from them both on why brain health is such a critical priority. First, Dr. David Satcher.
I think it's getting more front and center every day, but I think we have been afraid to say much about the brain because it's the kind of organ that you can't easily access without doing harm. And so it's unlike other organs in the body. The brain is really the predominant organ, even though it might constitute only, 2% of the weight of the body. It is much more important than that in terms of the role that it plays. When it comes to how we live, I think clearly physical activity, good nutrition, avoiding smoking, avoiding drugs, all of those are areas that are critical for the brain to function normally, for the brain to function properly. And so we have that responsibility to nurture the brain in terms of the way we eat, the fact that we have regular physical activity and good nutrition. All of those things are critical for the development of the brain. There are people who don't have the opportunity that other people have to be physically active and to engage in good nutrition. So we now know that probably 40% of Alzheimer's disease is preventable. However, in order for it to be prevented, we need regular physical activity. We need good nutrition. And there are still children in this country who don't have access to safe places to play, don't have access to nutritional foods. And so we need to stop and say, what is it that we can do now to improve the outcome and to give children the best chance of developing normal brain function? And that's something we can do. And yet we have to admit we still have a lot to learn. So the brain is also a place where we have a lot of research that still needs to be done. And we have to get about the business of doing it.
As a pediatrician, Dr. Jocelyn Elgers, who also spent 30 years working as a doctor in a nursing home, is focused on brain health and early childhood education.
As you say, I am a pediatrician. And I think you have to start early to make a difference. We do too little, too late. We could do more. We even know how to do more things, but we work on it too late in life. You know, I'm always telling people children are half as tall as they'll ever be by the time they're 3, know half as much as they'll ever know by the time they're 4. So we've got to get started in getting the children organized, thinking, and involved. And hope, will, and drive has been determined by the time they're 5. But if we think about our senior citizens, we've got to keep them involved. I think part of the thing that was standing in the way in the past is we didn't know as much about the brain as we do now. I think every day we're learning more and more and more. Our high-tech CAT scans, MRIs, and other kinds of metabolic activities of the brain, we're learning more and more. We also learned an awful lot about what lead did to brain. And we're still having problems with lead pipes and drinking water in many of our big cities. And we know that that destroys certainly children's brains.
Dr. Satcher, who also has a background in family health, when asked about wellness checkups for the brain as an important part of primary care or the annual physical, had this to say about why patients rather than the physicians tend to broach the subject first.
Well, they shouldn't have to, but they do. You're right about that. Parents should not have to ask physicians to check the brain, but they often do. I think it's Patrick Kennedy who talked about the complete checkup from the toe to the top of the head. Clearly, when it comes to doing a checkup of a patient, we can't do it without including the brain. We can't do it without including mental health. We've got to be able to include that as a part of the person. When we don't do it, we send the message. Now, I can be critical of parents here, too. I can say that a lot of parents, because of the stigma surrounding mental disorders, won't, in fact, take their child to a doctor and say, I want you to check his mental health, because it's almost like you're supposed to be embarrassed if somebody has a mental disorder. You're not supposed to be embarrassed. It's another health problem just like any other. It just happens to be the brain, which is probably the most important organ in our body. Not probably, but is. But the fact of the matter is that people, out of shame, if you will, often will ignore problems of the brain. I think it's a feeling of almost hopelessness. It's not just shame. It's almost hopelessness that there's nothing we can do. There is something we can do. And every day we're learning that we can do more. And we can do more as individual physicians to individual patients, and also do more in public health. In other words, public health can do more to create the conditions in which people can be healthy, even though they may be struggling with the mental disorder. Public health can do better. Public health can work with families where there's a person with Alzheimer's disease. So there's more we can do in public health, just like there's more we can do in medicine.
The underlying issue of this conversation is health equity, but it's hard not to be inspired by how each of the doctors overcame challenging childhood circumstances, weathered racial injustices, and rose to the top ranks of public service. The commonality seems to be a sense of purpose. Born of experience, survival, and endurance. Purpose can define one's life, be the difference between a job and a cause, an activity and a mission. It is the same reason that every Alzheimer's advocate knows firsthand why all of us are in this fight together. Thank you for sharing time with us. I'm Meryl Comer. This has been Brainstorm.
Support for Brainstorm by Us Against Alzheimer's comes from Karen and Chris Siegel, Biogen, and Esai. Subscribe to Brainstorm through your favorite podcast platform and join us for new episodes on the first and third Tuesday of every month.